Hello and welcome to Euromonitor International's podcast series. My name is Jessica, and today I am joined by Matt Berry, who is our Food and Beverages Insights Manager. And we are talking today, recording on November 9th, which is the day after Election Day here in the U.S., which I think is a really interesting time to be talking about our subject, which is the caffeine paradox. Could you tell us a little bit more about that and why we're talking about it today?
Right. So it shouldn't surprise anyone who's listening that modern life is quite stressful. And one of the things that's really interested me recently is how we relate this idea that we're all anxious all the time, yet we keep drinking more caffeine. If you look at EMI surveys, stress and anxiety are now the number two reported health concern across people globally, and only vision issues. So people need glasses or contacts. And that's really a remarkable finding that of all the health problems people deal with, stress and anxiety are now number two. What's also interesting is that that's not really a new finding. Look at the 2019 version of that survey. It's the exact same result. So as much as has happened in the last couple of years, you know, COVID and the war in Ukraine and inflation and natural disasters, it hasn't really changed the core baseline of stress that much, right? People are already stressed and these new things are sort of just thrown on top of it, creating a very, you know, anxious and stressed consumer who then is out there buying, you know, beverage products, which is my interest area, right? Because I work in food and beverages. And one of the things you see is people are buying a lot of very high caffeine products, right? Coffee does very well. Energy drinks are very vibrant segments. And in many cases, we're seeing high caffeine products do especially well within these segments, right? The Starbucks double shot becomes the Starbucks triple shot. Death Wish coffee does really well, things like that. And I've been trying to sort of square that all in my mind. Like, how does this make sense? And my initial theory was there'd be a caffeine ceiling. At some point, realize we're drinking too much caffeine and we would just hit a wall at some point and we'd stop. And that's not what I found in the research. What I found, in fact, is we're just drinking more and more caffeine, knowing full well that it has these negative side effects on us, but we keep doing it anyway. And that's a very paradoxical effect. So I call that the caffeine paradox.
Thank you for reminding me of all of the things that we've all been stressed about at elections to that today. So the more anxious we become, we still continue to consume caffeine that might have the same side effects of our anxiety. That is like anxiety heightening almost.
Exactly. It's fascinating, right? Because it's not that people don't understand caffeine. Caffeine is among the best understood parts of beverages, you know, in the world. It's been around for literally centuries. You know, every major culture uses it. So it's not that we're not, you know, putting two and two together. It's that we're saying that, yes, I'm stressed. Yes, I'm anxious. Yes, that's a huge problem for me, but I have bigger issues, and that's why I'm going to keep drinking caffeine. So we really see that people are trying to get 1,000 things done in a day, right? And that's part of the reason they are so stressed, of course. And it's two-way street, too, right? Because also stress makes them believe they need to get more things done, right? And what is the most reliable partner really in human history to getting things done? And that is caffeine. So we see that people, as they're stressed and anxious, keep going to caffeine because they know that'll help me get through the day. That'll help me get everything done. And that's just really fascinating.
I like that you call caffeine a partner. I feel that way sometimes.
I think many people do. They're very strong emotional ties to caffeine.
That being said, though, it's interesting that there is this emotional tie. People are drinking more caffeine. But yet I see in my own newsfeed all the time, articles telling me that all of my problems, sleep, anxiety, everything would just completely go away if I just cut back on caffeine. Yeah. And I we know that it has these negative side effects. So people want to do this, right?
Yeah, if you look at those same surveys, you see it's an aspirational ideal. Mm-hmm. People want to cut back on caffeine. They tell our survey takers they're trying, but you don't see that in their observed behavior. Interesting contrast with alcohol, where we see very similar also aspirational goals to drink less. But in that space, we see what we call the no-lo segment. So the non-alcoholic beers, alcoholic spirits, things like that, exploding popularity, right? The fastest growing and most exciting category of alcohol right now. But we don't see that so much in the soft drink segment. There are certainly some interesting low caffeine and caffeine replacement brands out there. Things like Mudwater, for example, you've probably seen ads for that. Yeah. But those are not moving numbers nearly as much as the no alcohol segment is. Because the caffeine remains largely aspirational. Now, the reason is because, you know, what stresses us out is, of course, a lot of things. But the core of it is we feel like we need to get a lot of things done, right? We're never doing enough. No matter what it is we're doing in our jobs, our personal life, we always could be doing more. And the most reliable tool humanity's really ever developed to getting things done and having more energy is caffeine. It's been used for centuries across really all the world's major cultures. It's something we know, we trust. So we might like to, you know, getting more sleep. We might like to be being more mindful, living in the moment, not looking at our phones. But the reality is most people are unable to do that, either because their life circumstances don't allow or because they personally just find it too difficult. And caffeine's always there to then help them push through, which creates then the paradox, right? They know they're not sleeping well, they're anxious and stressed, and they drink more caffeine, which means, of course, they tend to get more anxious and sleep less well, and the cycle just continues.
Oh man, I feel like you just like described the past couple of weeks of my life. I feel very seen by that. I talk to a lot of people who like, you say that this is an aspirational thing to quit or to cut back on caffeine. And I talk to a lot of people who say like, oh yeah, I would like drink tea or something that was more low caffeine, but I really like the sort of like performance of making my caffeine, the ritual of that. Could that in any way contribute to people not shifting to these low caffeine options?
I think bluntly people just like coffee. Because the thing is, you could do these rituals with tea, right? I mean, the Japanese have had very ritualistic tea ceremonies for centuries. So if you wanted to replace your coffee in the morning with a tea or theoretically even a mud water sort of ritual, that would work. But people don't tend to do that because, you know, they like coffee. Especially now in inflationary times, there's an interesting phenomenon where coffee is very protected as a permissible indulgence. If you look at like Starbucks earnings reports recently, they say that they're not seeing any decline in demand for their products, which is fascinating because if you look at like personal finance gurus, right? They're always talking about you need to stop buying your $5 latte in the morning, put it in a savings account, and you can buy a car. And right now we're seeing people cutting back across a wide variety of stuff. And they don't cut back on the $5 coffee. And the reason is because in the grand scheme of things, actually, it's quite responsible, right? It's a little treat you can give yourself. If you only splurge on a $5 coffee in the morning, that is your self-care, right? That is your splurge. That's actually very financially responsible. So we're seeing a lot of people doing that. They're saying, yeah, I can't maybe afford the restaurant meal like I once would have, but I can have my coffee because things are stressful. There's a lot going on, but this is a moment of joy in my life that I really want to hold on to. And coffee plays a very important role for a lot of people, which is why you see them all very reluctant to leave it.
Yeah, there's a definitely like an emotional component to it of like, it feels like this is something that, I mean, it is literally tied to your mood, right? Because if it is a stimulant, it's going to be boosting your mood. So it by its nature has an emotional component to it. So even though there might be more side effects to it, you deal with perhaps the anxiety or the agitation in the end so that you won't feel like you've either denied yourself something or you've made yourself feel like you can't perform for that day and the sort of like anxiety that gives you.
Right. Because coffee and other forms of caffeine are so tied to performance, especially at work, that's often a hard stumbling block, right? If you are going to go cold turkey, you're really admitting to yourself, you're going to have, you know, a week or so of just very difficult times at work. And a lot of people, you know, can't make that jump. And we're talking about coffee, of course, because that's my personal focus. But this is also true of, you know, energy drinks, for example. A category also does extremely well in an era in which we're allegedly trying to cut back on caffeine. Symptom the exact same paradox. Not the same emotional component. People don't tend to be as attached emotionally to their can of Bang, but it serves a lot of the same purposes.
I know. I used to work in the bar industry for a long time, and those folks are pretty emotionally connected to their Red Bull.
Yeah, Red Bull has a little different. It's more of an established brand. But yeah.
So, you know, talking about other products that are out there, there is interest in products that relax you. You know, that's the other side of this. The store shelves are full of things that promote stress relief and calming. Product claim all the time talked about. I've talked to people recently that there are product claims on chewing gum for like relaxing you with chewing gum. What's happening in the beverages world in relaxing products?
Yeah, I think what's happening is people want to be extremely energized. They want to be energized and extremely calm when they want to be calm. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of careening back and forth to these two extremes. It's not so much a moderation. So we're seeing the sort of the shadow effect of all this high caffeine is an intense desire then for relaxation products to counteract that rather than a cutback of caffeine and to establish more of a stable baseline throughout the day. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of things, the functional soft drinks, things like Recess, things like Kin, very hot right now. But even herbal teas, right? The most, again, very stable category has been used for literally millennia in some cases, doing very well. If you look at the tea segment in the United States, herbal teas are by far the standout. And the main reason I would argue is because they do such a good job in the functional space, and above all, in the relaxation space, right? Everyone knows the Sleepy Time Tea Bear, right? And trust him to help them relax. And so we're seeing a lot of this. We're going to drink a lot of coffee during the day, and then I'll drink something in the afternoon to calm me down again. So as the caffeine paradox accelerates, the relaxation drinks also do equally well as we try to get, you know, a moderation between our two extremes.
So it's like the consumers either want an on switch for themselves or an off switch. They don't want any like dimmers.
Exactly. It's slow transition. So I don't want to be the same throughout the day. I want to be very energized at some points and very relaxed other times.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, speaking of people wanting to like be off and on, to like have that control in their lives, I think that kind of points to this moment in time where there is so much anxiety. There is so much that's out of our control. So to me, I think of that, and I think about inflation, of like costs are rising everywhere. I can't control this. There's nothing I can do. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit before, but can you touch a little bit more on inflation's impact on this, on the stress levels, on how that relates to caffeinated beverages?
Absolutely. I think that people often underestimate the importance of the psychological effects of inflation. They focus too much on the hard economic numbers. If you look, the American Psychological Association does a periodic survey called Stress in America. And in March of 2022, they found that inflation was the most stressful thing that affected Americans since they started doing the survey about a decade ago. So not COVID, mind you, it was inflation. And we're seeing that for sure. Inflation right now tends to be a real psychological burden because it's inescapable, right? Other things, you know, the war in Ukraine, for example, is stressful, but you can tune it out, right? You're not always focusing on that. But like inflation, you know, you drive your car, you're thinking about inflation. You go to the store, you're thinking about inflation. You're at work, thinking about inflation, right? So it's that kind of constant background noise across a lot of our lives. And that is, makes it uniquely stressful. It's very, very disorienting. It creates a sense of instability, right? Things that we were used to and confident in would always stay the same, suddenly very different. And that has very strong effects on people.
So speaking on regulation in this field, you know, I'm interested in knowing, is there a point at which the government could step in regulating the amount of caffeine that people are taking in?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's one that probably, you know, we're not going to see much activity in the coming years. If you look historically at caffeine regulation, governments around the world only really step in when children are in danger. So you see some countries in Europe, for example, are banning energy drinks for under 18. South Korea actually moved to ban coffee sales on school campuses because people are drinking too much. But it's only ever when children are affected. You don't usually see adults being a target of regulation. The idea generally is that they can be trusted to regulate their own caffeine consumption. We see also a lot of consistency globally in terms of recommendations. 400 milligrams a day is a recommendation of in Europe, in the United States, in Canada. So there's always that guideline. But so as long as I think people don't step over that guideline in a single product, which would be a lot of caffeine, to be clear.
Yeah, sorry. You said 400 milligrams a day?
Yeah.
That seems like a lot to me.
It is an incredible amount of caffeine, yes.
I mean, do you know exactly how many cups of coffee that are around? How many cups of coffee?
It's hard to say with coffee because it depends a lot on the size and the brew strength and stuff. Five would be a good general sort of sense. Right now, there's a lot of talk in the RTD coffee space about some really high caffeine products. Death Wish recently offered its first RTD, which is 300 milligrams. So we're still well under that. And that's still a very high amount of caffeine.
And it's called Death Wish.
Death Wish, yes.
I could get that. That would make my
heart. A brand that does extremely well right now. Yeah. Another reason why I'm interested in this paradox, because we talk about, you know, everyone's cutting back, and Death Wish coffee, which is known to be extraordinarily caffeinated, and that really is their whole pitch, and it does very well. And largely, I think it's because a lot of people are getting acclimated to caffeine. Mm-hmm. Is you can get used to it, and you often need a brand like Death Wish then to ramp up.
I think there's like a level too of people like being a little bit braggadocious about the level of caffeine that they can handle. I heard it in the office today. I heard somebody saying, oh, I get a coffee beverage with 5 shots of caffeine in it, or 5 shots of espresso in it. So there is sort of like, I see that in the branding of Death Wish. You know, just being called Death Wish, of like, no, this is what I need. Like, this is what I can handle. That's really interesting then, that like something, things that have that much caffeine, the government's not going to touch it unless it's marketed to kids. It's like, you know, your choice. It's within safe bounds. Do your thing. But for kids, it's different, you know?
Like, exactly. Because the thought is that they're not able to regulate themselves. Yeah. It's not too different than alcohol. Alcohol is obviously much more tightly restricted, but the general principle is the same, is that kids aren't able to decide these things. An interesting really subset of this category is the, I would say, yeah, the, kind of the macho caffeine segment, which is very small. I'm not talking about Death Wish here, because Death Wish is a more mainstream brand. Brands like Biohazard, Black Insomnia, you can see as much as, you know, like 800, 900 milligrams. Really, it's very dangerous products, which exist for the sole purpose, I think, of appealing to people who want to say they have the most caffeine product possible. Not a huge part of the market by any means, but just the fact that these sort of brands exist is fascinating. So it does speak to the fact that some people want to see how far they can go.
Man, like the idea of that much caffeine just like sent me into
it. It's named Biohazard, right? Like they're not hiding what it is.
So we're down this path, right? People are getting increasingly anxious, more inflation, more anxiety. People keep drinking caffeine because that's what we do to get by. So what is the end point? Like where does this all point to?
Yeah, I think we keep going a while in the same direction, the idea of more and more caffeine in some products, the more and more relaxation in others. Mm-hmm. But I think the way we could get out of the caffeine paradox is moderated caffeine. Now, first of all, there's always tea, right? So that's always been an option. But the American consumer especially has not shown a real inclination to switch over. But I think there is new possibility of things like CBD or L-theanine being added to coffee to create a more moderate energy experience. Because we know people are really not going to abandon the caffeine unless they have to. So if you give them the caffeine that they need and then offer them an added benefit that allows them to sleep better, to be, you know, avoid jittering, avoid crashing, there'd be a lot of interest in that. And we're seeing that segment just sort of starting to emerge. And I think we're going to see a lot more development in that. But I mean, the blunt reality is I think the next decade or so remains a very anxious one in American life, especially in the globe more broadly. And we're going to keep treating that by drinking lots of caffeine, thus creating a very paradoxical effect.
Yeah. So then for companies who are building product portfolios with caffeinated beverages, it seems like the relaxation and the caffeinated beverages kind of will at the ends of the spectrum, those will kind of stay relatively the same. Like there is on and there is off, but there might be something in the middle. There might be new points in the middle where it's like a relaxed coffee buzz or a relaxed caffeine buzz.
But yeah, the idea of these need states is one that we're really focused on at EMI. Mm-hmm. One of my colleagues, Shane, recently did a report on need states. And this is a tremendously complicated graphic about all different possibilities. Because that's the thing. It's a lot of talk about nuance. It's not just about being on and off. It's about the vast different degrees of on and off we need to be at different times, different reasons, right? We hear about things like flow state, for example, which is a new term we hear a lot now in the segments. Kind of vague in meaning, but it's not on or off, right? It is its own thing. We hear about, you know, mood boosting and relaxing and calming, the difference between, you know, sleep versus relaxing. Yeah, so there's going to be a tremendous amount of nuance. And one of the key areas of functional beverages in the coming decade is going to be figuring out these nuances and developing beverages that target very specific need states for consumers who will have tremendous needs, both in energizing and relaxing.
So it's about listening to the needs of your customers and trying to find out exactly what that need is.
Exactly. That's what, you know, it's always been about. You know, the drinks industry has always been about figuring out, you know, why does a person need a beverage and then providing them that exact beverage when they need it? Mm. If you think about it in really broad terms, the human being really only needs water to survive. So if they're drinking anything that's not water, there's a reason. It might be the taste, it might be because the marketing is effective, but in many cases, because they want to achieve something specific. They have a goal in mind. And that's one of the things that makes beverages so fascinating as an industry is, you know, how are the different ways that people try to solve their problems using beverages and how can beverages do that most effectively?
Yeah. We are trying to solve the problem that we are very anxious and trying to do 1,000,000,000 things in every day. And we need our coffee and our splurge to get through and to do that.
Exactly. One thing we see actually in our surveys, again, is we ask how you treat stress. And the answer is you get a ton of answers, right? Everyone's doing 5 or 6 or 7 separate things. So if people are buying a relaxation beverage, they're also, you know, trying to exercise more and they're going to download a mindfulness app. And they're going to try, you know, maybe get a Zen garden and aromatherapy, right? It's an all-of-the-above approach. So people will try a lot of things. And beverages, I think, maybe I'm a little biased, I'm, you know, focused on this, but I think they're one of the more effective ways to do it. Because we do know things like, you know, we've used chamomile for literally since Roman times to calm. We know it works, right? I mean, it works in a healthy way too. So I think beverages are an ideal way to treat a lot of this.
Is there an end point at which stress would go down and people would drink less coffee?
That's a real big societal question. When will Americans be less stressed? When the basic foundations of modern life significantly change.
Cool.
So I'm not going to put a time frame on that. So you can, listener can decide for themselves when that might be.
All right. So it's possibly a long road ahead, and there's going to be lots of caffeine in our future.
No doubt.
Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, if you'd like any more information on this topic or any of Matt's other work, you can find that at Euromonitor's Insights pages, which will be linked below. Thanks for joining me today.